Today, the real costs of migration. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. In an increasingly globalized workforce, which intensified in the wake of COVID-19, as nations looked to fill acute worker shortages, New Zealand was seen as a desired destination. It was actually ranked the most attractive nation in the OECD for skilled migrants, according to a 2023 report by the Paris-based organization, which rated the country higher in categories such as future prospects, family environment, and inclusiveness. But the volume of arrivals is now raising concerns about pressure on infrastructure, rising home prices, and the ability of the economy to meet the extra demand for goods and services. That in turn could fan inflation, compounding the strains. Very strong population pressures will continue to stress the economy, said Kelly Eckhold, chief New Zealand economist at Westpac in Auckland. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand has picked up on the trend, citing the impacts of high immigration on house prices and rents. That may see it hold its benchmark rate, which is at 5.5%, until the end of this year or even into 2025, even if global peers begin to lower theirs, though even that is now less certain, as I've discussed recently. The development has also spilled into the political arena, with Prime Minister Christopher Luxon, who won office last year by focusing on the cost of living issues, and he called for a revamp of the immigration system. He described the record influx as unsustainable. In fact, on April the 7th, Immigration Minister Erica Stanford tightened rules for low-skilled workers seeking entry to include a minimum skills and work experience threshold, a shorter allowable stay for 3 years, and an English language requirement. She wants to curb arrivals to avoid overstretching key services such as health and education, while swinging the balance of immigration back towards those with essential skills who will boost productivity and economic growth. But the immediate challenge for many immigrants is finding an affordable house or rental accommodation. Across the country, rents rose 5.1% in March from a year earlier, and house prices have increased 3.9% in the past 9 months, recovering from a prolonged slump sooner than many expected, as demand began to outpace the number of homes being offered for sale. Migration is, of course, a contentious issue. Expanding the population can prop up anemic gross growth rates, even if the growth per capita goes negative, as in the case in Australia and the UK and elsewhere. And more people equals more people to tax, whether via income tax or sales taxes like the GST and the like. A recent upgrade in the UK's demographic outlook was issued in January on the back of high migration flows, which will mean a bigger pool of workers and hence a larger economy. And similarly, much of Australia's recent economic performance is just a function of surging population growth driven by inbound migration after the pandemic. The current levels are eye-watering and, as we discussed recently, impossible to house, adding pressure on health services, education and home prices, plus a remarkable continuing rise in rent costs, and of course, rising rent costs continue to drive inflation higher. Businesses, on the other hand, demand more people, first to gain access to workers, and second to stoke demand for their goods and services. They resist any attempt to trim migration, of course. And actually, businesses concerned at restricted access to international talent are starting to speak out. In the Netherlands, where the Anti-Immigration Freedom Party placed first in the November vote, Central Bank Governor Klaus Knot made the case that the country as a whole and firms like chip-making giant AMSL Holding NV in particular need migrants to prosper. And the UN's International Organization on Migration, the IOM, said recently that despite the fact that most migrants are still within country, international movement is on the rise, and the core drivers of displacement are things like geopolitics, technology, and climate change, and they are all intensifying, with a notable rise in irregular channels for migration as safe routes are closed off. Now, the IOM points to the evidence being clear that the flow of people beyond borders drives human development globally and helps to meet critical labour demand, while also enriching societies. Well, I have some concerns about that particular view, which seems to me a top-down, thou shalt do this sort of view. By the way, education levels vary widely, of course. But almost 3 in 4 international migrants are of working age, that's between age 20 and 64. But on the ground, the truth is that the benefits are much less easy to spot. Ireland's economic rise and more recent allure as a low-tax European base to companies like Apple helped turn the nation of emigrants for much of the past 200 years into a 21st century success story and a pull factor for migrants. Yet, the reality of more than 1,600 asylum seekers without accommodation shows an acute crisis in Ireland's immigration system, a situation that's alienating locals while failing those who are arriving. The lack of spaces for those seeking international protection has led the government to find housing solutions in hotels and vacant buildings around the country, prompting tensions with local communities. And protests have broken out in a number of towns and suburbs, and buildings earmarked for or rumoured to be allocated to house asylum seekers have suffered arson attacks. Immigration has not traditionally been high on the political agenda in Ireland, but according to a recent poll by the Irish Times, it now tops voters' concerns. The then Taoiseach Leo Valcalo was forced to respond while in Germany to plans to convert a hotel to asylum seekers in Drangheim after about 200 people gathered to protest against the decision in February. His successor Simon Harris promised a shift to a fair and firm migration system in his inaugural speech as party leader. The blowback of high migration is putting more political pressure for change, but the real immediate impact is a chronic lack of affordable housing and other infrastructure. The impact on those residents in many countries is actually profound, and the cost of living and housing erodes living standards and is leading to the rise of tent cities and other social disasters. In fact, Australian housing affordability is at its worst in more than 2 decades, with both aspiring homeowners and low-income tenants slammed by surging prices, rents and interest rates. That's according to the latest ANZ Housing Affordability Report. The average portion of income needed to service a new mortgage blew out to 48.9% nationwide during the March quarter, up from 43.1% a year ago, and a sharp jump from the 34.8% decade average. By the way, that chimes with my own recent stress analysis as I discussed. Meanwhile, the time it takes to save for a deposit increased to 10.3 years, more than a year longer than the long-term average. And nationally, asking rents lifted from a record low of 8.1% year-on-year in October last year to 8.6% over the year to March. That's according to CoreLogic. So the situation for renters is just as grim. The average tenant will now need to allocate 32.2% of their income on rent, while low-income earners will have to spend 54.3% of their income to cover their rent. So it's now time to reassess the true impact of high migration policies that have been driven by big business, the Treasury, and some international agencies, because on the ground, the impacts are shattering. And politicians do need to wake up, or they will find that they could well be out of office, perhaps for good. And by the way, no, trimming overseas student arrivals alone will not solve the problem. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.